This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wang Xiaoning. It is 7:36 in the morning and we have some international news stories for you. But before that, in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where, Julian, you're going to be speaking to Saifuddin Abdullah, our Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Well, that's right. There's going to be a lot to talk about, the relationships with China and Singapore, as well as all things foreign ministry concerned.
All right. And we're also running a poll on Twitter, so at BFM Radio. And we're asking ahead of our breakfast grill with the Minister of Foreign Affairs this morning, are you satisfied with Malaysia's foreign policy direction? So your options are yes, no, and we have direction. So please do go and vote and tell us what you think. Now, aside from that, today's midterm elections in the Philippines are regarded by some as a referendum on President Rodrigo Duterte's administration as voters assess his 3 years in office. Now, Duterte says he hasn't lost an election in his three-decade political career and is hoping that his candidates for the midterm vote will continue his winning streak.
So 18,000 government positions are up for grabs in the midterms, including half of the 24-seat Senate and about 300 posts in the House. The midterm vote should test Duterte's popularity. But that said, the election will give him a chance to tighten his grip on power by retaining his congressional majority.
And even with the slowing Filipino economic growth and controversial policies, including a deadly drug war, the president is poised for a majority win in both houses of Congress, according to Bloomberg. And he's also been having an agenda against the journalists in Philippines. He has arrested Maria Ressa Duterte, but Duterte still remains very popular.
Maria Ressa being the editor-in-chief of Rappler. Now, according to Bridget Welsh, who's an associate professor at the John Cabot University in Italy, the opposition against Duterte has remained somewhat disorganized and fragmented since the 2016 presidential elections, as Duterte's critics from the Liberal Party and leftist groups fielded different Senate bets and campaigned separately. Now, Pulse Asia ran a pre-election survey which showed that only one opposition candidate for the Senate, so that's incumbent Senator Bam Aquino, who's a cousin of the former president, only he has a shot of winning. And the last time a lone opposition candidate won a midterm Senate was in 1967. Now, aside from that, last week, the Malaysian government said that it will respect Thailand's decision if the kingdom wants to continue with its plans with the Kra Canal project. So this was said in the Dewan Negara by Deputy Transport Minister Datuk Kamarudin in response to a question from Senator Mohamed Suhaimi Abdullah. He wanted to know the government's response after Thailand announced it would review the construction of the 102-kilometre-long canal.
So, Datuk Kamarudin does not expect the project to have a huge impact on Malaysian ports, as Malaysia's ports have shown an increase of 9% in cargo handling for the first quarter of this year. This is a demonstration, according to Datuk Kamarudin, of the progress as compared to the same quarter a year ago. I'm not sure if this kind of numbers and this kind of growth would apply if indeed the Kra was coming onto the market, because this kind of growth is in existence without the Kra, right?
Well, of course, the question is whether the Kra itself will happen. I think there's been a lot of speculation in terms of the cost. And in the past, it was said that the Chinese would actually fund this project. But the question is, do we want the Chinese funding a project? The Thais asked that, and I think that's why it's been delayed. Of course, Thailand itself has been facing its own domestic political issues. Elections have just ended, and I'm not even sure whether the government can be formed, because at the moment it's kind of a split, right, between the two major parties. But the other issue is that once you have this Kra Canal, 80% of Chinese oil imports, which now currently pass through the Malacca Straits, can go through the Kra Canal. And that could damage not only just Malaysia's shipping services, but also Singapore's.
But it makes sense for them to bypass the Malacca Strait if they can, because the Malacca Strait is a maritime choke point. So there's been piracy in the region that that countries on both sides of the divide are trying to combat. Now, to get some insights into the significance, though, of the Kra Canal, we have on the line with us Dr. Tang Siu-man, head of the ASEAN Studies Centre at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Tang. What are main concerns for the Kra Canal should Thailand could go through with it?
There are several. I think first and foremost, if the canal is built, it will effectively divide southern Thailand into two halves. One half will be, of course, closer to southern Thailand, and the other half will be closer to the northern Malaysian states, right? And as we know, there has been some separatist movements there. The Patani United Liberation Organization and other parties have not been too happy with the government in Bangkok. How would this play into the dynamics of the canal in terms of the construction? And also, if the canal is built, would it impede the effectiveness of the Thai government security regime, either the military or the police, to pacify or to keep the peace in that particular area is something that we have to consider.
And what about the effects it will have on other countries around Thailand, namely Malaysia and Singapore?
I think, in fact, a few years back, there have been some discussions of certain parties in China, especially in the Guangzhou area, certain bankers and financiers coming in to work with the Thai counterparts to finance and to build this Kra Canal. This leads to the next question, if some external party is funding this, would it give more control over this very strategic asset? Who can go through, who cannot go through? Hypothetically, if a U.S. warship were to use the canal when it's built and conduct a FONOPS operation, how would Beijing see this development? Yeah, would they impede the other military vessels, not just U.S., but Japan and others from going through? So in other words, if Thailand were to build this, it has to handle this very hot potato of maintaining neutrality throughout. If it's a canal, it's only for Thailand and its friendly parties, then it becomes a liability to that particular country, and also the commercial viability is also in question. And I think you asked a very important question in the sense that the geopolitical aspects of it, it will effectively change the dynamics of how we see the Straits of Malacca. Hypothetically, if a war were to break out or conflict were to build out, would occur, then the Kra Canal will be seen as a strategic asset. The warring parties would want to seize the asset or would mine at the assets. This is something that the owners of the canal would have to consider. There has been precedent in the Suez Canal. You know, you just build a canal is one thing, but security in the canal for passage, for usage, is yet another question. Yeah.
What would be the economic impact of the Kra Canal be for Thailand and also its neighbours like Malaysia, Singapore and Indonesia specifically?
For sure, there'll be some knock-on effect on Port Klang, on Penang. But having said that, the port is not just stationary in the sense. A lot of the utility and the relevance and value of the Port of Singapore, for example, is about the management. Right, it's not just the location per se, it's not just the geographical location per se, but a lot of it has to do with the manpower, the system that they have, the security and so on. Because the value of Singapore is not just the location itself, but it's used as a transshipment, which means ship from the Indian Ocean. The Sun Litter had to sail through all the way to China, but using Singapore to load and unload, and from there they can go to Australia, they can go to New Zealand, they can go to China, they can go to other parts of Southeast Asia as well. But having said that, this thing is too early to make any prognosis on this because we do not know the development of the canal itself, what it would do. But closer to home, to Malaysia, this puts a very important question that we have to ask on the ECRL. We recall that the idea was being mooted and was proposed. China was very insistent, was very forefront to say that if the ECRL were built, it would be part of their solution for the Straits of Malacca dilemma. Effectively, to the ECRL, they no longer have to pass through the Straits of Malacca. They can pass by, bypass Singapore. If the Kra Canal is built, then what is the utility of the ECRL then? Why do you need to offload precious cargo and a lot of time and insurance onto a rail line? Yeah, which have limited carrying capacity. And why not just use a ship to just go through the Kra Canal onto China? Wouldn't that make the ECRL project moot?
Thank you so much, Dr. Tang. That was Dr. Tang Siu-man, head of the ASEAN Studies Centre at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute. After this, we'll be back with more discussions on the Sandakan by-elections. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.